Papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Media Project gives you a half hour of commentary and analysis, lifting the curtain, let's say, on how decisions are made in newsrooms. I'm Rex Smith from the Upstate American, formerly editor of the Times Union, here with my colleagues, Judy Patrick, vice president of New York Press Association, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady.
Let's pull that curtain down.
No, back.
Throw it away.
No more curtain. Barbara Lombardo is here, formerly executive editor of the Saratoga and the Record in Troy, and now teaching at UAlbany.
Great to be here.
Wonderful to see you. And the producer of the Media Project, the morning host of WAMC, David Gustina.
Out from behind the curtain. Nothing to see here.
Behind the curtain, the young man in the room he is here.
Is that right?
Yeah. Stanley, when was the last time you were the young man in the room?
It seems like every time I'm with you.
Yeah.
Rex. <right. laughs>
So we're glad you're here, David, because the reports this week about growing costs, falling sponsorship, and a wave of layoffs in public media. Not hit here yet, but this is happening around the country.
Well, we talked a little bit about this last week, and I don't want to go too far into it again, but I'll tell you this, Rex. I can't thank you and Barbara and Judy and Ira and all the folks, Mike Spain, who have filled in over the years on this program. You don't get paid a dime to do what you're doing, and yet we provide content and information about how the media works each and every week around the country to many, many stations. And that has value. And when you look at stations, including places like WBUR, WNYC, WNET, if you have a program, usually there's a lot of costs associated with that. It's hard to keep programming on the air. And when underwriting, which we're seeing countrywide, and yes, it's advertising, Rex, fine. When that is down, you have to make it up in some way. So if you're not making it up from your listener fund drives, for which we're known for, and while it's taking a little bit longer this time, it will certainly be finished, most likely by the time this program airs, we hope. But it points to the fact that this is now affecting an area that seems somewhat immune, and that's public broadcasting. The problem is that we are becoming fast one of the final places where you're going to get the journalism of verification. We talked about this last week. If we don't continue to speak truth to power, to have a set of facts that we can agree upon, I don't know how any media today can survive what increasingly becomes a much more partisan style. And to this point now, even the fake sites are outnumbering the legitimate newspaper sites.
So it makes it very difficult. But the issue is, it's difficult for all of broadcasting, obviously, not just public media, because, for example, podcasting has gotten glutted. And so the defense of public media has been to create podcasts that have been very successful, very popular. But there is also a question about news avoidance. Many people are now saying that they are avoiding the news entirely. But the news still, even if they're trying to avoid it, does tend to find them, right? News is all around us, including on social media. So I guess that's good news.
Ezra Klein, the New York Times columnist, runs a podcast, very interesting podcast, and he had a guest on, I think last week or maybe this week, who's done some research that talks about people who don't like politics, who are annoyed at us when we start talking about politics. They have no interest in politics, they're annoyed by it, and they tend to get their news and information from social media, and that tends to skew right-wing, and that is why they tend to vote conservatively. I think we need to recognize the fact that there are some people, no matter what we do, are not going to be interested in talking to us about the Hunter Biden trial, the Donald Trump trial, by what's going on in the congressional hearings. It's just a fact. I think it's always been out there, but it's a political part of the electorate that I think both parties are looking at and trying to attract.
Yeah, and I think part of the challenge is what has developed over the last couple of decades as a 24-hour news cycle, when there really is not 24 hours worth of news. And when you're hearing the same stuff over and over and over again, there's reason to turn it off or to stop listening or go numb.
Well, there is plenty of news. It's just that what is defined as news, but especially by commercial media, is pretty limited. And that's why you have the cable channels that keep doing the same stories over and over. If you don't think that there's a lot of news, think of the BBC broadcast that we hear on WAMC, which is news that most of us never get around
to. That is a great point. That's one of the things I love about the BBC news broadcast on WAMC.
Mm-hmm.
Good, that's a good point. Oh, there's a lot going on around the world. But say for the diminishing number of people who are watching television news, and I know that is a shrinking audience, if you flip from one channel to another, you're basically seeing the same two or three top stories.
Unless it's Fox News, which
analysis.
You know,
not to interrupt you, but that is not news. That is propaganda.
Well, let's think about this. One of the top news criteria we look at is impact. What impacts people the most?
Mm-hmm.
Government decisions, legislative decisions.
Well, in the long term, but say today, the weather is of great import.
But it has a long-term governmental implication that we're not and haven't been planning for long-term. And we have to be able to understand that despite the fact that so many people turn away, and a lot of it's from political news because it's, I can't take it, it's too negative. But we're actually trying to do our jobs and report these very impactful decisions that are getting made that, even if you don't believe it, are going to affect your life in a personal way.
You know, I had an interesting conversation with a small business operator in downtown Troy. It was saying, you know, I really appreciate the local news and what you guys have done. But he said, I just can't get over how partisan these other organizations have been. He said, I subscribe to the Washington Post. And, you know, when did it just become partisan? And I said, well, it's not a partisan bit to point out that truth is here as opposed to there. I mean, our job is not to just say this is what somebody says and this is what somebody else says, but to help give people a true picture of the world beyond their own experience. And when truth is not spoken, the media needs to point that out. And it was like a fresh concept that he had never understood before, that we're not just meant to be these, even though we talk about a lot on this show, right, that we're not supposed to just give people a sense that everything is either here or there and you have to choose in the middle.
Yeah, and how do we not tie the great unraveling of truth to the Trump administration directly? Alternative facts? Truthiness? The idea that because you have a different political view that the truth is different? I mean, this is what we're talking about, that the justice system has failed when it comes to the conviction of Donald Trump, but it's successful when it comes to Hunter Biden.
Yeah.
You know, when it's coming from a Republican point of view.
Except that, of course, their contention, which the media cover, but which has totally dominated Fox News, is that this was a sham trial, that it was put up by the Justice Department so that he could be convicted of something as opposed to being convicted of what he should have been charged with, which the Justice Department didn't prosecute. And people don't understand that, of course, this case was brought during the Trump administration and Hunter Biden was investigated during 2 years of the Trump presidency.
Right. In other words, that the truth is an interpretive thing.
Yes.
We can just interpret it from our perspective, and that's the truth because we think that.
You know, I think about truth telling. Every time I listen to a cable news program, especially MSNBC, it seems like whenever they refer to the former president, Donald Trump, they throw the word convicted of so many felonies. I mean, it could be a story about his proposal to do something wild and crazy, but then they will put that in it. When I first started to hear it, I thought, man, it seems like they're skewing their coverage. But then I thought, no, I don't think they're skewing their coverage. He's running as a Republican candidate for president. Maybe we do need to repeatedly refer to it. It should become part of his moniker.
I'm actually tired of hearing him called as a convicted felon because it sounds like it's a loaded term to remind people that he was convicted of a crime because there's a portion of the population that doesn't believe that that was a fair conviction. However, things that you can see with your own eyes, I think we need to be saying, who continues to deny that he lost the last election and whose insistence that the election was stolen led to January 6th. I think things like that, and I guess part of it is my own feelings about which things should be absolute deal breaker.
There's so many things.
And to me, that's bigger. Do you want as president the person who still believes the election was stolen? maintains it was stolen and maintains if he loses, this next one will have been stolen.
How much of journalistic decision-making, though, do you make a decision on what you think is important for people to know versus what people really want to know? Because so many voters are only interested in their pocketbook. We know that people vote on pocketbook issues alone and believe, one rightly or wrongly, that they are not doing as well now as they used to, and that that is what is powering the Trump campaign, probably. But if you're trying to give people a sense that democracy is imperiled, that the defense of Western societies is imperiled by Trump's approach to the NATO alliance, that his proposal to impose tariffs in place of taxes would actually be terribly inflationary and particularly hurt working class people, as economists agree, this is hard to get across. People don't perceive it, and people turn away from the news anyway when you start talking about economics.
That's
and
the real problem.
And,
if you don't have people that trust the press, then we can't be the arbiters of what information is factual or not. We've denigrated the institution of media to the point where we've got 30% of the public that doesn't believe anything they say and would be more likely to believe in a conspiracy theory or some alternative form of media that's telling them what they want to hear. Now, you look at this analysis from Media Matters. There was an interview with Matt Gaetz, Janine Jackson. She talks about all the charges against Trump. It's not just the hush money, but here's what she says. But commentary from much of the news media, where we learn about what's happening, what it means, and what we might do about it, is platforming the idea that this might be a disputable issue that has to do with personal feelings about this particular man. You could joke, tell me you're moving the goalpost without telling me you're moving the goalpost. But there are real-world stakes here, and the contortions media are going through to make a convicted felon who boasts of his crimes on one side of a reasonable debate is telling us something about Trump and his followers, sure, but it's telling us something about the news media.
That is, we're giving too much credence?
Given the volume of inflammatory nature of these claims that are coming from the right, I think a good practice, says Matt Gaetz, for the press would be to explain to their readers and to their viewers that what is coming from the right is totally false, that they are creating these conspiracy theories and this theory of politicized persecution for their own benefit. But instead, what we tend to see is a lot of he said, she said coverage, in which there is a certain amount of credence being given to these claims.
I think that would have been a fair criticism 7 or 8 years ago. I think that the difficulty right now, and that is just an echo of press critique all along, that, oh, it's just all he said, she said. I think there has been thoughtful work by journalists in recent years to try to be more truth tellers. But the public is tuning us out. And that's a difficulty. If you may be telling people the truth and people turn away from it, the news avoiders, in part because we are challenging people to believe things they don't want to believe.
But how come, Rex, we've come to the point where Jon Stewart and The Daily Show or any of these, John Oliver or any of these folks, you watch it and it's coming off as if they're doing their research and their homework. And yes, it is in a humorous context. But we're in this sort of bizarro world where that seems like they're doing the real journalism. I come out of there going, look at this investigation that John Oliver is doing into said issue.
Those facts that he's presenting are all presented by real journalists. It is an analysis. He's a commentator and all of that good stuff. Look at the great commentary that appears in all of our journals, in the New York Times and the Washington Post. They're making the same points that he is, just that he does it very cleverly. But he's using facts that are presented by the media, just not presented as well as he presents them.
I mean,
right?
The stuff on the Supreme Court and Alito and the deep dives that he does on these issues, you really come out understanding
those.
But understand that began with ProPublica research.
He's
building his shows on traditional journalism.
But the network newscasts aren't doing that kind of
thing. Okay, there we go. Commercial television news.
That's right.
Doesn't do it, but that is because they're trying to reach a mass audience and a lot of America turns away from it.
Yeah, and most of the people who we're talking about that are going to vote in the election are watching what?
And Jon Stewart and John Oliver don't need that big an audience.
They don't.
A big niche.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you've ever had a conversation with an uncle or somebody who is a Trump supporter, and then they'll just turn you off, I think this is what the news media is encouraging. encountering on a large scale.
Don't give uncles a bad name.
Yeah, they, that's right. So
they don't
want
to hear it. Mm-hmm. They don't want to hear it. And they're going to walk away. You can hit them with all the facts. You can do it in a reasonable tone. You can do it in a pleading tone. You can use all sorts of different tones. It doesn't work.
It's cognitive dissonance.
And so I think there are some people you need to write off, but I think that there are those in the middle, those who are not paying attention to the news, who are not watching Fox.
And even if they are flipping between real news and Fox, there are people, and I think we've established this at some of our prior discussions, that there is a significant portion of the population who are not affiliated with either the Democratic or Republican Party, at least not on paper, and that we can presume or hope that they are news consumers and that they're going to make decisions based on real news.
The difficulty of finding people who are not news consumers, though, and reaching them in any way that they can consume truth is so significant. You know, think about social media. Facebook, Meta, which owns Facebook, has reduced the amount of news that people see in their feeds because it is alienating. So in order to keep that big audience, they're getting rid of the news. Still, last year, 30% of adults said they regularly get news from Facebook because it's their friends who are putting it there. But if you were running a newsroom today, which we are not, I would think that it would be really important to try to do a better job of delivering your news on Instagram and TikTok. And I don't know about X. I mean, the difficulty with X, of course, is that it's unreliable. And so many of us have stepped away from the former Twitter as it has been trashed by Elon Musk. But we really need to try to reach people with an entertaining, interesting way of giving them factual information.
Well, Rex, I feel I should speak on behalf of our news director, Ian Pick, is here because he does run the newsroom. And we just had a giant news meeting last week in which he made those exact points that we need to be out front and really attach ourselves and create an identity for ourselves individually on social media platforms. One of our reporters, Josh Landes in the Berkshires, is literally the guy everybody goes to get the reports in the Berkshires from all the city council meetings. He's developed this following because of the way he does it. He adds a little humor, but he's the study.
And
he's the
what
expert.
What platform does he use?
He uses Twitter and Facebook, but we do them all, and Threads, all of them we post to. But it's either X or Facebook. One of them, I'm just
those
a little
biggest,
confused right now, but those are the two biggest.
Isn't Facebook now kind of the old people's platform?
Yeah,
definitely.
It also seems to go partisan. That the Facebook are more left-leaning and the X are more right-leaning.
By design of Elon Musk, yes. Even whether it's good for democracy, again, this is Pew Research did this study, X still stands out as a place that people turn for politics, but now 38% of Americans say that it's mostly good for democracy. That's up by 6 percentage points from last year because people had decided that X was actually bad for democracy, which I think is probably true.
I don't know. It's hard because, you know, from our generation, the older generation, it seemed like an extra job, but it's really not. It's really something you can use to help reach people you could never reach before. Like, I think about putting out a tweet and saying, you know, this week on the Capitol Connection, it's the state comptroller he's going to talk about. Maybe you lost some money and it's waiting for you in the state coffers. Maybe that will prompt someone who normally doesn't listen to WAMC but came across that. Oh, maybe I got some money. In other words, we'll be reaching people that might find it by clicking that never would have found us traditionally.
Right.
The other thing is Reddit. Reddit slices down by city, Troy, Albany, Schenectady, and you can, our producer, Alexander Babby, posts to there. And he often gets reaction from people that say, oh, thank you, I didn't realize this was happening. So
you have to be using them all.
You have to use them all in order to try to make sure you extend your reach.
It's, you know, one of the things that I do appreciate is traditional news publishers deciding that they're not going to make such a big deal out of the revenue stream of circulation. We used to get, in the old days, our platforms, our newspapers, got about 30% of our revenue from circulation. And that was a tough stream to give up. But now I think I got a solicitation from the Gazette, Judy, for 25 cents for a month.
Yeah, my old paper, the Gazette.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they've been doing. And in fact, I've seen papers offer subscriptions for a dollar for the entire year or for a dollar for 6 months.
Right.
And what the idea is to get the numbers, to get your digital subscriber number up, and then to slowly increase their costs over time after 6 months and make it difficult for them to cancel, I think, is another issue, and slowly drive those numbers up. But what we're finding is that people are canceling. They're sticking around for the $1 for 6 months or 25 cents a week, and then they're walking away. I think it's a strategy that a lot of papers are using, but to really stick around and pay the $4 a week forever, I do that for some of the papers because I find it so valuable.
Right. I also pay what I guess would be considered full freight for some newspapers, including mm-hmm. the Times Union. And even though I roll my eyes going, why am I paying this much? Well, I want to support the local journalism, you know, the Times, the Washington Post, Boston Globe. But there are others that I have subscriptions to, as Judy mentions, that are like $1 for 6 months or $5 for the year. And I actually have a calendar alarm set in my phone for like 5.5 months from the Times.
Good for
to
you.
Remind
That's
me,
a good idea.
So that I don't get
paying these
cancel.
Things, you know?
But what is, so if we're establishing that a majority of the people who pay for a newspaper are paying less than full price,
yeah.
what is meant by full price? What
well, the average, the for the median there's... monthly cost for a digital news in the United States is actually $200, almost $200
yeah,
a year.
Yeah, but what is that based,
but nobody,
based on what? That's,
nobody does it. Well, there's this is a survey of...
So what's considered full cost according to the statistics?
Yeah, but only 31%, only a third of the people pay that, according to this new survey that has just come out from the Digital News Report. 60% paid less than that median. The people who pay a dollar or less a month, that's only 7% of the total. So, but my point is that I think that it would be really great to not have to worry about paywalls. That is not something that a lot of people in the business are yet subscribing to, but it just seems to me that we're going to have to find other revenue vehicles, and I think actually public media has the answer to that, and that is voluntary contributions. Build something that is so desirable so that people feel they're a part of a community and they voluntarily support it.
I'd also like to see the newspapers, I know this has been discussed many times over the years, but having a pay-as-you-go so that if I'm reading the tease of an article, sorry, I'm not a paid subscriber of the Gazette, but sometimes I wish I was when I start to read an article and it doesn't let me get past the first paragraph. And maybe if I had like an account and it's linked to my credit card, I might have thrown in 50 cents or a buck to...
You know, there's been conversation about this for 20 years, about getting a couple of pennies per article, and that could just develop
something,
this
or just say,
technology.
Buy this, and you can have right. the rest of the week for free or something.
You know, paywalls are a real problem for social media distribution, for example, because it can really alienate someone who sees an article on social media, tries to click through, and hits the paywall.
Yeah, it shoots you in the foot.
Yeah, it does, and in that respect, some people are withdrawing or scaling back the efforts they spend on social media, and in large part because it's not bringing in much digital revenue at all, as more people focus on programmatic advertising and shy away from their traditional advertising sources. So paywalls, I encounter them a lot because I'm looking at information all over the country and I want to read the local news story.
Yeah.
And to get there, I hit a paywall.
Yeah, it happens to me. I read Gannett papers all the time because it's the largest chain and I use them in the Upstate American. But because I present Gannett news often to try to get a smattering of news from across the country. And, you know, the choice of what stories they put behind a paywall is very frustrating to me because
you want to read.
Yeah, the important stuff gets locked down. And I think that it is just time for publishers to recognize that that is really alienating to news consumers. But, of course, the formula is to say you have to be so compelling that you can find a substitute for that revenue stream, and that is voluntary contributions if your work is good enough.
How much can we get from the aggregators or the AI that's being fed all the news that's been done by people who had to work
zero.
To produce it? I mean, and aren't there lawsuits with that? Have the Times joined a lawsuit?
Yeah, the Times has a lawsuit. There are a lot of lawsuits. There are some media who are signing deals with the AI companies, you know, if they think that they can't prevail on lawsuits. But that is a digital and legal frontier.
Right. Those are the big players. And what it's going to do is freeze out the small players who really generate a lot of the news on which the big players run with.
Mm-hmm. Before we leave this week, we need to just talk about for those of you who have been following the questions at the Washington Post, the publisher, formerly a British journalist, was more involved in a phone hacking scandal than previously known. The question there is
shocking.
Whether he used fraudulently obtained phone and company records, which, you know, is a no-no. Sometimes you use stuff that is illegally gotten and it is real information. Sometimes, however, if you're encouraging people to do that illegal work, that is an ethical violation.
We're not talking about the Pentagon Papers.
We're not talking about the Pentagon Papers here. But you can't say to a reporter, okay, go out and break into that email stream. Go out and
break the law.
Break the law. If you urge a reporter to do that, you're liable for that. And
but if we didn't urge them, if they just brought us the material and it contained the truth, that's different, isn't it?
Which is how the New York Times got Donald Trump's tax returns.
Right.
Literally came across the transom through the mail. So that is not illegal. What is questioned here is whether the publisher of the Washington Post 20 years ago actually subverted the law by giving money to somebody who illegally tapped into this.
And he spurred on the journalist, by the way, that he answered them to go further and investigate. So we'll have to see if anything else comes out.
Well, do the journalists in that Washington Post newsroom have trust, have faith in this new publisher? And they have to have trust in him in order for that newsroom to operate efficiently.
I agree. All right, we are out of time. That was Judy Patrick. Barbara Lombardo is here. David Gustina, our producer, who always pulls us together. Thank you, David.
Back behind the curtain.
And I'm Rex Smith, thanking you folks for joining us once again this week, and hope you'll come back for the Media Project.
The richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-ling, 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 ding-ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
But publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.